everybody, welcome to the Highlight Show. This is a show within our show where we sit down and talk to people doing really cool stuff. It could be someone starting a restaurant, it could be a youth group, it could be somebody who has just gone through something hard and has a really cool story to tell. We sit down with them, we pick their brains, and we glean what life lessons we can learn from their journey. Give it a listen. Welcome to the show, everybody. We are back for Highlights. I think this is season 5 now, and we are adjusting, we're changing, we're adapting, and we're focusing on mission this year. So we're talking to folks who have, you know, had that conversion moment and then now have a mission, that they're focused on something, they're doing some good work. And I am very blessed to be here with David from Pints with Jack. I'm super excited because I'm a big Lewis nerd. And so, like, we've been, you know, aware of you guys on social media, listening to the podcast. And so I'm really excited to talk to you today. So, David, thank you, man, for being on.
You're very welcome. It's good to be part of another Inklings group.
Exactly, right? Like, we need more of them. More and more of it. Like, I feel like, so our mission is meaningful conversation. The reason why is just because it feels like there's not enough people just having conversations. It's either got to be a debate or a argument. Like, you can't just talk, you know? Mm. So, David, why don't you give us just a really quick intro, like who you are, a little bit about the show, what you're doing, and then we'll dive in.
Sure. My name is David Bates. I am English, which is why my words sound this way. This is why they sound this classy. It's true. It's true. I'm just not hiding it.
I can't argue.
I've lived in the States for coming up to 15 years, a little less. Okay. But I moved here for an adventure, and I definitely got one. And mm-hmm. I also got a wife and son into the bargain. We lived most of our time in San Diego, but we are now in the Midwest. We're in Wisconsin. And I run Pints with Jack. I have two co-hosts, Andrew and Matt. Andrew is an Episcopalian seminarian. In fact, he's just about to graduate. Mm-hmm. And Matt is a fellow lay Catholic like myself. And we run Pints with Jack, which is at least weekly, sometimes twice weekly podcast, where we go through the works of C.S. Lewis, chapter by chapter. And we also interview scholars and authors and people who have expertise in areas that are tangential to C.S. Mm-hmm. Lewis. So he was greatly shaped by the Western canon and literature. Yeah. And so we talk to those people as well. And so the Inklings met on a Tuesday to share a pint in the Eagle and Child. So our mm-hmm. episodes come out on Tuesdays. And they would also occasionally meet on Thursdays at Magdalen College over a cup of tea. Mm-hmm. And that's why we occasionally also have episodes on Thursdays. And so we've had 5 seasons like you guys. So we've been through Mere Christianity, The Great Divorce, mm-hmm. Till We Have Faces, The Screwtape Letters, and we've just finished The Four Loves.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, like, those are, I mean, a lot of them are the big ones in there. But, like, I think I picked you guys up on Till We Have Faces. Because that was one of the ones that I did not expect. It was just like a dark horse that came in on me. And I was like, I finished it and I was like, oh man, that was surprisingly blew my brain up. Like, it was really good. And I didn't know what to come into it because I was used to Mere Christianity and Screwtape. And then mm-hmm. I got that and I was like, this mixed it up and I loved it. The diversity there.
Andrew calls it the Till We Have Faces whiplash when you close the book and he's like, what did I just read?
That's exactly right. That is exactly right. So you said something there that caught me. You said a late Catholic. Is that what you said? Did I hear you say?
Lay Catholic.
Okay.
We are both reverts, myself and Matt, to varying degrees. And I've actually spent most of my adult life at a Byzantine Catholic church. But since we moved to the Midwest, we don't have one local. So the nearest one is Minneapolis. So we go there periodically so my son can receive communion.
Nice. That's fantastic. So you said that you went back and forth, so like you were born into Catholic family and then did something mm-hmm. different, came back, or what does that journey look like?
So probably let's ground a little bit. So my mother was Catholic, my dad was nominal mm-hmm. Anglican, didn't really practice a whole lot. And my mum was a great influence. She took us to Mass every week. I was an altar server. She and my sister, they worked in children's liturgy. We had a great parish, and during the liturgical year, my mum would always take time to do special things to match the liturgical seasons. And so I had a really good grounding in the faith. And then I went to university, and there I met a community called Verbum Dei. And they're an ecclesial community, so they've got priests, they've got sisters, and married couples. And their two big things were prayer with the word, what you would call Lectio Divina, although they never called it that. But it was prayer with the word and evangelism. Those were their two big things. And so it was there that my faith really came alive. There was a prayer group that I got suckered into going to. And it was there that I came across a line from Jeremiah, which I technically knew. It's in the opening where the Lord says to Jeremiah, "Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I set you apart. Mm-hmm. I appointed you as prophet to the nations." And it was like the Holy Spirit had gone over that passage with a massive highlighter. It was the difference right. between those being words to Jeremiah and those being words to me. I felt known, and I described it as though somebody turned on a homing beacon inside of me. And it was about that time I came across St. Augustine's words where he says, "You made us for yourself, O Lord, and our hearts wander restless until they rest in you." And so this was a real coming alive of my faith, and definitely a very clear transition to, I'm a Christian because this is how I was raised. And it's like, no, this I choose. This is my life. And then after university, I then got a taste of regular parish life, and it was horrible.
it's not always the most fun. Yeah.
No, it's not. So I was in a parish where everybody was ancient. And I now realize, looking back, they were probably about how old I am now. But everybody was ancient. The homily was nothing but platitudes and just insipid affirmations that Jesus just wants us to be nice. And there was no real sense of mission or community. And so that was when I started looking around to see what other options there were to try and find. Another community like the one that I had at university,
right.
where people really cared about the faith, they loved scripture, and they wanted to share Jesus with other people.
Yeah, and that passion in prayer is hard to find, you know, like especially when you have the Sunday goers who are trying to get there before the football game starts, you know, well, here in America, right? Like, so it's...
different kind of football in England.
Different football, yeah, exactly. So like I agree, that was kind of where my faith really... formed, to where it went from being, yes, this is, you know, like I went to church, and now this is like, oh no, this is God in my life. And it came from like a very small, passionate prayer group, right? And to where like you met with God and you're like, oh, this is real, you know, not just something that you do on a day. And so it's interesting that you found that in college. A lot last year when we were doing the conversion stories, a lot of times college was that challenge year, like we were transition from high school into college was you were either going to go all in or you were gonna fall out for a little while, and then maybe you came back around or something like that. But there was like seemed like there was a really pivotal moment there, as it was a transition. You were kind of leaving your parents, you're kind of stepping out on your own, and you had to start making your own decisions. And so faith was either going to become yours or you were going to get rid of it because it was your parents and never yours in the first place.
Yeah, my mom was really good at making sure I was well connected with the university chaplaincy, but even before I turned up, so I knew where it was. They knew about me, and I'd always enjoyed church, so it wasn't like I was going to suddenly decide I'm not going to Mass now that I don't have to.
Right.
So I was well connected, and it was from there that I found out about this other group, and from there was sort of no looking back.
That's fantastic. Yeah, that's actually really smart. I never thought about, you know, making sure that once you came into a new place, that's because like I have kids, right? And so if we just send them off into a new place, they're gonna struggle. So if you can connect them to, even if it's not the group they end up with, but if they can find a starting place where there's some security, they're not just gonna toss everything off because they're unsure about it, you know? So that's awesome. So how did you transition or where did you start to find your mission? Like, where you're like, hey, I need to, this is my faith, this is my own. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, I need to do something. Obviously, evangelism was a part of that group. So it seemed to be like part of the culture and part of what you had an affinity for. But like, yeah, you're kind of out of that now, and then you're like, I need to do something again. How did you find that?
Well, when we were growing up, the parish that we were in, as I said, we all did things. So my mother and sister were part of children's liturgy. I was an altar server, and that was actually something that I continued doing until just after I finished university. So it was something that I did throughout. And so that definitely inculcated in me the idea that we serve in the body of Christ. That's what we do. Mm. It's not a question of if, it's a question of where and how. I definitely had that clear idea. And as I said, we did a lot of prayer with the word at university, and you can't go through Paul's epistles without constantly tripping over this idea that we are a body, that we mm-hmm. receive gifts, and they're gifts that are meant for service. So mm-hmm. that was really the mindset that I came to my faith with, and that was fostered there, that I'm serving. It's just a question of how. And there was a fantastic quotation. I know it from Frederick Buchner. Someone else might have said it before him, but he said that the place that God calls you to is the place where your deep gladness and the world's deep hunger meet. So it's the place where your deep gladness, the things that you love, things that you're passionate about, and the world's deep hunger, what the world needs, what Christ is calling you to. So where those two intersect, this is where you're called to be. And that has changed over the course of my life. When I was in England, one of my big passions was homelessness ministry. It was something that I really felt very passionate about. So I went looking for places to serve. And if you go looking, you will generally find them. And right. I also generally had the attitude that if I was looking for something and it wasn't there, well, suppose I'd better get going. There's mm-hmm. actually a line in the preface for Mere Christianity where Lewis is explaining why he's writing this book, why he's giving these radio talks. And he says that with regards to mere Christianity, the basic Christian claims, he says it seemed like the part of the line where he could serve best. And he says it was also the place where the line seemed thinnest, and said, so I naturally went to it. And I would say that's generally been quite true for the areas where I've served and the attitude that I've brought with it. So when I was living in San Diego and a young adult and didn't have a small child waking me up at all hours of the night, I had much more time. And so the things that I loved, I just invited other people along. So I loved going to the theater and the symphony. And so I created the Finer Things Club, stealing it from the office. And so this was one of the groups that was in our diocese that people knew they could always reach out to. And there would always be a social circle of people welcoming them. Myself and my housemate, we were each other's best man. We decided that we wanted better accountability, that it was something that we wanted, and we knew that other people wanted it. And there wasn't really any kind of structure for that. There wasn't an existing group, so we made one.
There's not.
We called it the Men's Huddle, and it was really simple. You know, we would get together, usually have something nice to drink. And then we would just talk about some of the key areas of our lives. How's our vocation going? Whether we were single or married? How was our prayer life looking? And just creating that space, because there wasn't one
right
in existence. And another part of my own journey was I went to Teze in France. It's this ecumenical monastery. It's the only thing like it in the world that I've ever come across. But they have a particular style of singing, a style of chant that I absolutely love. And I met a friend who had also been to Teze, and she said, oh, I want to get together and sing some Teze songs. I said, all right, let's make this a thing. And so it was a monthly event that we would go to her house. People would bring food. We'd do a potluck. We'd create some food. I would run through some of the songs, and then we would light a bunch of candles and then spend an hour in prayer. And really, that's pretty much the similar story for Pints with Jack as well. It came out of a very similar sort of motivation. I had always loved C.S. Lewis. I grew up on Narnia. It's one of the first things I can ever remember being read to me. And I had rediscovered Lewis in my 20s. I was babysitting for some friends at my church, and I was babysitting them, their kids, once a week for, I think, about 2 months. And so in that time, we read through The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, because trying to wrangle four children is a nightmare, so you need some bribery to make sure that happens. So the deal was, you brush your teeth, you change into your pajamas, and you're in bed, then we will have a chapter of The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And as I read it to the kids, I fell in love with Lewis again. And so I bought the set again and devoured it in a week. And I was now at a point in my faith and in a circle where people said, oh, you know, he wrote other stuff as well. I was like, I had no idea. And so that was when I started Mere Christianity, The Great Divorce, Screwtape Letters, etc. And I had said for a while that I had wanted to go deeper with Lewis and just talk about some of the stuff in more detail, because he has some really interesting ideas. And I was at a party in San Diego, and that was where I met Matt for the first time. And we discovered that we both had a love of C.S. Lewis. It's very similar to what he says in The Four Loves, that friendships typically begin with a, oh, what, you two? I thought I was the only one.
Right, right.
So we're at a party, we're talking about Lewis, as happens at every great party. And I had said that, hey, I've always wanted to go a bit deeper. Why don't we just like meet for a coffee or a beer periodically and go through one of his books? And after we agreed to do that, I said, why don't we just post it on Facebook, see if anyone else wants to join us? Mm-hmm. And before we knew it, we had a C.S. Lewis book club. And so I think we got through about 8 books before I left San Diego. But when I let people know on Facebook that we were doing this, I had have people say, can you Skype us in? And I was like, oof, that sounds like a technical nightmare. Plus, we were going to be meeting in a coffee shop, and I didn't think that was going to end well.
Right.
So after a couple of meetings, I said to Matt, this is great, but I feel like we're going through this stuff way too quickly. Because if you're meeting once a month with people, you're going to do Mere Christianity in, say, 4 months or something like that, and which means we've got to get through 12 chapters in an hour. It's like, oh, that's just we're rushing. I don't like this.
You're not going to do it justice, yeah.
Exactly. And so that was when I had suggested, why don't we do a podcast? That way we can take our time, go through chapter by chapter, and the people that are outside of San Diego who want to be part of this, they can do that virtually. And so that is really where Pints with Jack came from.
I love that, because there's a couple of things there that I'm picking up on. And one is that, you know, when you think of evangelism or missions or anything like that, you're usually thinking, okay, I have to go to Uganda, I have to get my malaria shot, and I got to make sure that, you know, like, that's when you hear that, or at least, you know, where I came up, that's kind of what you're thinking, like, oh, I got to go build schools, or I got to go. Those are all great things, right? Like, don't get me wrong, good work that needs to be done, but that's not everybody's call, you know. Mm-hmm. Like, there are people that have deep passions for that, and that's good, they should go do that. But then there are some of us who don't necessarily have that, and so they might hold back from, you know, quote unquote mission work. Whereas, like you said, if you just find something that you love and you share it with people, you'll find that passion that you have is going to kind of bleed into other people, and it's going to open those doors. You're going to build that connection, and then it's going to open the doors for additional conversation. And then all of a sudden, you know, you're talking about Jesus, you know, and wow, how did that get there? Like, every time I've shared that with somebody, because it's so part of who we are, like, it doesn't have to start there, right? It can start in multiple places. And so I love the idea of just, you know what, if you love something, start there and see where that goes. And then just the openness that you had for trying something, for doing something, just saying, hey, why don't we do this? I love this. You love that? Let's meet, right? Because I feel like, especially as we come out of the mess of COVID, like, isolation, we know that isolation is not good for us, right? And so we are created for community, and we're created for this back and forth, for this conversation, for interacting with the other constantly, so that you learn and you grow and you're challenged. But you're only going to do that if you're open to it, right? Yeah. And sometimes it just might be a single thing that connects you, and everything else about you is different. But that single thing is an opportunity to talk to someone new, interesting, and different that you would never have spoken to before, purely because you love Lewis or you love, you know, a particular style of chant and different things like that. So it's, I love those two things, that missions can be anything, and anything. Start with what you love, and then being open to it, you know, and just answering the call.
In the days before COVID, I would go around the country and give talks. And one of my favorite talks was called Entrepreneurial Evangelism or Entrepreneurial Faith, or something like that. COVID's been going on so long, I can't even remember the title of my own talk. But this was my main point. And when I would be invited to a community, this would be the talk that I would give if I was given a free hand. Because it was basically encouraging people to step out of the boat a little bit And it mm-hmm. can be a really small step. And right. there's another quotation, I can't remember who said it, but it was something along the lines of, don't ask what the world needs, ask what brings you alive, and go do that, because that's what the world needs, more people who are fully alive, as St. Irenaeus said. I've had people say that they listen to our podcast, not so much for the technical unpacking of what we're doing about Lewis, but they just want to try and catch a little bit of the enthusiasm that we have so that mm-hmm. they can push through when they're struggling with some of the stuff that he's saying or trying to wrap their heads around it. And this is what the world needs. It needs people who have come alive. And
absolutely.
And who doesn't want to hang out with somebody that's doing something that they love?
Right. Yeah, it's contagious. Like I've gotten into all kinds of weird things I had no interest in just because I was interacting with somebody who was very passionate about it. You know, and
absolutely.
And the contagion catches it quickly. And so you know, we have to be cautious of that. Like hopefully we're cultivating it towards the positive and not towards the negative, obviously. But yeah, if you want something, be around people that are passionate about it, and you'll find that you pick up on those things too. I love that because that's actually, well, again, like I was telling you before we started, like our whole purpose is meaningful conversations. And that came out of, like you said, I was going through my RCIA program, so confirmation into the Catholic Church. And I did that in college, right? So I was going through a history of theology class and, you know, starting at zero and then working through, you know, the foundation, you know, the councils, all of the stuff. And I was like, oh man, there's this history that I really want to connect to. And that's when I started looking into the Catholic Church. And then my cousin was my sponsor. And so me being later, you know, having a foundation of life, really, would come across things that we were learning in my RCIA class. And I'd be like, okay, some of this stuff sounds like shenanigans, man. I need to work through it because I'm not just going to buy off. I'm not just going to sign off on it automatically. And so we would meet up for Taco Tuesday. And nice. I would just bounce all of the hard stuff that I'm coming off of, and he would just field it, right? He would just answer it because he didn't give me a hard time about it. And we could just really dig into these things, and we found that it was like the most meaningful time in both of our lives is where we were sitting and having really good conversation. And then exactly like that, we're like, this is important, and life happens. You separate, but we want to keep this going so that we can do it over a podcast. We can just do it, and we can share that with people. Because these conversations, like if we're getting something out of it, the hope is that we're not that unique, right? So mm-hmm. many of us have shared experiences. So if we're getting something, pretty sure there's somebody else who could benefit from it as well, type of a thing. So I love it. I love it. That's exciting to me.
And if your ministry is something that's feeding you, it's producing fruit in your own life, then you get to prevent something that has happened to me many times, and I've seen it a lot, which is ministry burnout. When somebody takes on a responsibility because they want to serve, they want to do something good, it comes from a really good place, but it's something that burns them out.
Whereas I was just going to ask if you ran into something that's given you a hard time, like where you're like, oh man, this is like bumps in the road, right? Like I'm sure you had, because like when you're open to things, you're going to have some wins and you're going to have some losses, so...
Yeah, I would say for me, the biggest danger has always been burnout, because I always want to sort of make sure that what I'm doing is the best it can be. And I have an OCD start type of personality and a perfectionist kind of personality, which can be absolutely deadly for this sort of stuff.
Yes, it can.
And so actually really loving what you're doing, I had one of my friends, he was starting up, he was doing rosary walks on the beach, because we lived in San Diego and that's the kind of tough kind of life that we live. And he was doing that. And when he first started, he would contact me each week and he says, oh, we had this many people. It's like, okay, that's really cool. It's really great. Mm-hmm. Would you do this if it was just you? If nobody turned up, would you keep doing it? And he went, well, yeah. I said, okay, cool. Then you don't have to worry about numbers. You know, God will call to you whoever needs to come. But the point is, this is something that is feeding you, so it's therefore always worth doing. And it's always worth making sure that it stays that way. Because I've had ministries that I loved initially, and it became a grind. It became work. And you kind of need to reassess at various points your own heart, and also just the way that you're doing it. Because sometimes it's, are you just trying to do all of this yourself? You have friends. You have family. You have people that would love to help out and take over some of these different things that you're having to do. if you ask them.
Right.
And so speaking to your pastor, speaking to your friends, and making sure that you can preserve the joy that you have in your ministry is really the secret to doing that long term. And for Pints with Jack, that's meant that we don't do the editing ourselves anymore. We get someone else to do that, Taylor from Forte Catholic.
Right.
And particularly, it's funny, because I started doing that when I knew I was going to propose to my girlfriend. So it's like, okay, I'm going to be getting married soon. I'm going to have a lot of other stuff on. But I want to keep this going, because I'm still seeing that there's fruit both in my life, and I get messages from other people that they seem to really value this. So I need to make sure I can keep this sustainable, because ministry, it's not a sprint. It is a marathon. Yes. And so there was a Bible study group that I ran for, I think, about 2.5 years. And I honestly spent that entire time looking for my replacements. And so that meant that I would regularly call upon individual members, and we would go out to lunch and we would talk through the next Bible study that we're going to do. And I would hand it on to them so that they would have practice in leading. And even if they then left, it then meant that they had now got that little bit of experience and they had had that encouragement. Mm. So if they moved to another state, another church, whatever, that they still felt that this was something that they could do. Because so often people don't think that they can actually do what they would like to see. I've never done anything with a manuscript, but I wrote a manuscript on how to lead a Bible study. And one of the main excuses I hear people say is that they would love to do it, but it's like, I'm not a theologian, I don't have all the answers. It's like, well, you don't actually have to have all of the answers.
No.
In fact, as long as you want to know the answers, that's good enough. Everything else we can fix.
right. Yeah, that's hitting home when you say that, because we literally just learned that. So we've been doing this for multiple years, and like at the beginning of this year, like I asked the question, I was like, hey, should we just stop? Just to ask devil's advocate, should we just quit? And both of us felt that we're like, oh, no, because for us, it was still good. And then that was the question. We're like, okay, well, what if nobody listens? Are we still good at doing it? And we were both like, yeah, man, these conversations are really good and we're feeling it. But we had gotten so caught up on, we need to get downloads, we need to get likes on social media. And like, so this year we've been freeing ourselves from all those things, and just really, the conversations have gotten so much better because we're not burdened with trying to produce something for someone else. And we're really just having meaningful conversations. And so the conversations have gotten better. Our lives have freed up. Like, I got rid of social media. Like I'll do it on my computer every once in a while, but like, I was like, I can't do this in a healthy way. I can't do it without like needing the, you know, getting a certain number. So I was like, you know what? Gone. I'll load it from my computer and I'm out. You know, like it was a long journey to get to that realization, but it's an important one. That's a big one. So
because it's a marathon, not a sprint.
Absolutely. Yeah. But we're very trained to instant gratification, man. We want it now, you know. And that's, God's in it for the long run. He doesn't play the short game. Through your journey here really quick, what's been the biggest impact on your faith? So you've kind of done a bunch of different things where you really seem to answer your call multiple times. Like, that's had to have an impact on your personal faith and your personal journey by doing something, or even getting into a group that's focused like Pints is. Like, that's had to have like a deep internal impact as well, I would imagine.
Yeah, I would say I keep having to learn the same lesson over and over again, which is to be open. So a few years ago, before I met my wife, I'd actually been living in Seattle, and I had worked for my company for about 10 years and had enough. So I quit my job and I went to Spain to walk the Camino de Santiago. It's like 500 miles from France to basically the other end of Spain. And over the course of the 33 days that I was walking, you obviously spend a lot of time thinking and praying. And something that I realized as I was doing it was that I'd been open to God in a lot of ways, but not always. So as I was walking, I realized that in terms of speaking, that was actually something that I had done a few times, but it had always been when a priest was going to be speaking at Theology on Tap, he was sick, and the director asked me to step in and give a talk instead. And so I just felt like I was just I was an emergency replacement, so that was okay. But I'd always resisted the call to do that ever again, or to put myself out there and say, I would love to do this if you ever need me again. Mm-hmm. And so that was when I came back from the Camino, I realized it's like, that's not a good way to live. It's not a good way to live to say, Lord, you may use me in any way except these ways. That's not a spiritually healthy way to live. And so yeah. I then sent out an email to the people that had heard me speak before and said, okay, I'm willing to do this again if there's anything that you'd like to do. And I spent several years, again, pre-COVID, doing that. And the podcast was also part and parcel of that idea, because it was something that...
It is.
I generally much prefer to be the person at an event who's behind the scenes, who's getting stuff done and important stuff, but I'm much happier to be out of the limelight. And I realized that was just me sort of just making excuses. So one of the big things from all of this is just to be open to God, and also be willing to engage with other people, because we always like making our own little kingdoms, and we can get very protective of them very quickly, and that also isn't very spiritually healthy. Apart from anything else, it then leads to a cult of personality. And well, if I'm sick 1 week, well, then it's not happening. If I leave town, well, you know, that thing that used to happen, it doesn't happen anymore.
Right. And it's not really meant to be you. It's about to be for God, right? So, like, if it's utterly dependent on you, then it's not about God. You know, type of a thing. Like, that's... You're speaking directly into me, man. I love that. and it kind of heads right into, like, my last little question I wanted to ask was, you know, like... If you were going to pin it down into like a life lesson, something that somebody could write on their computer screen and tape it there and read it every day, because David from Pints is my inspiration.
I'm going to pray for you.
But, you know, like there's always something that, you know, like at the end of it, we're going to want people to take away this from our life, from our work and our missions. What would that one thing that you would want someone to take forward from your from your work?
I would say, do what you love and invite others to join you. And if you're discerning a ministry, a vocation, whether a big capital V vocation or a small V vocation, discernment really is doing. It is rolling up your sleeves and just getting stuck in. I took two rounds of priestly discernment. The first one was horrible, because all I effectively did was just sit in my room and just navel gaze for a while and just felt awkward and stressed and nothing happened. It was terrible. The next time I did it, I actually sort of stepped out of the boat and started trying to do things. I went and spoke to seminarians. I spoke to priests. I spoke to marriage couples. I asked them about their stories. I read books. I actually went and visited seminaries. I went and visited monasteries. And I think it's the same with any kind of ministry. If you're trying to discern something, what the heck? Just start it. Just start small.
Just do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you find that your heart speaks to you while you're doing that, you can just keep going.
Yeah.
And there's a wonderful prayer by Blessed John Henry Newman. He says, God has created me to do him some definite service. He has committed some work to me which he hasn't committed to another. I have my mission. He has not created me for naught. I shall do good. I shall do his work. And I think that's probably the last thing that I would say. Every single person has a calling. Every single person has a ministry that God is calling them to. We always go to the parable of the talents. And a number of times I've heard people say, I think the Lord only gave me one talent or something like that. And it's like, a talent was a huge sum of money. This is one of the points of that parable. Everybody has been lavished with gifts. With gifts.
Right.
And if you love the giver, wouldn't you want them to give them back to him?
Right. Yeah, I bring that full circle to your talk about burnout too. You know, like if it's truly your call and it's something that you're passionate about, you'll find that it's, as you do it, it energizes you. And if you're gaining like, for lack of a better word, if you're gaining energy, like you get excited about it, then you don't run into burnout, because burnout is the, you know, having your energy sucked out of you and you being left empty. But like, if you're really in your call, man, God will continue to pour into you and you will never feel empty as you keep doing it. Because, I mean, you guys have been doing this for multiple years, and like you said, like, it, still feeling five. That's, you're not feeling empty, right? Like, no. If you've been doing it that long. So obviously there's something there, because God's going to keep pouring into it as you keep pouring out into everybody else. And so that's how blessings work, man. You find that, and God pours into you, you pour into everybody, and it just keeps flowing forward for good. Like, that's the goal, in my opinion, right? Is to be in that state, I think. So, man, David, I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate your insight. This is fantastic. I've been wanting to connect with you guys in some fashion for a while. And like I said, I'm not good on social media. So, like, I haven't interacted with you guys a lot. And so I really appreciate you being open to us, to a conversation with us. And man, I'm very thankful to meet with you and talk with you for a little while here.
You're very welcome. This has been fun.
All right. With that, everybody, we'll say adieu.
Adieu.